Historima. Listen to the extraordinary.
Γεννήθηκα στην επανομία. Ο πατέρας μου ήταν ορφανός από 2 ετών και μεγάλωσε σε ξένα χέρια. Η μητέρα μου επίσης από γεωργική οικογένεια, πολύ φτωχή.
I was born in Epanomi. My father was orphaned at the age of 2 and was raised by strangers. My mother too by a very poor farming family. From the age of 12 she went to work. They met working on the estate of some large landowner and fell in love. We were born and raised in a post-war generation that was poor and exhausted. My childhood was spent playing in the fields where my parents took me. I remember playing with grasshoppers, ladybirds and beetles and making garlands out of poppies, as well as with other small children. We would go for water when our parents gave us the signal, because we would always stay under a wild pear tree, a tree that gave shade and had a swing on it. Later, we went to school, to kindergarten and primary school. Our parents always in the fields. We had to take care of the home. We always had 2 goats, which we would milk. When the horse came back in the afternoon, we had to give it water, put hay in the manger, and unhitch the cart, because our parents were tired from work. These were the chores that my brother and I had to do every day, which we did happily and without moaning, because we saw that our parents would come home dead tired from work, as they left early in the morning and came back in the evening. We never had a holiday, even when we were in high school. The school holidays were at cotton time, when we had to go to work in the fields to do either the watering, the thinning out, or picking later on. What our parents wanted for us and advised us to do was to get out of the fields and study. Because I was good at school, the main idea was for me to study civil engineering. Unfortunately, because I played football, I got injured in a game and I couldn't go to the tutoring centre. So I decided to apply for a school that I was more likely to get into and study something that I liked because of the life I had led, agronomy. I believe this was a very important moment because it changed my life later. It was in my 2nd year, I remember it very specifically, because my father would make a little wine, which always spoiled towards the summer, that I learned of a small laboratory that gave advice about wine. It was opposite the church of Panagia Chalkeion and was called Chimikos, the chemist. I went to see them and asked, "My father's wine often goes vinegary. It goes off. What should I do?" He said, "Bring me a sample and I'll let you know." So I took him a sample, which he analyzed, and then he told me to come back tomorrow and I'll let you know what I suggest. I went the next day and he gave me some chemicals in small bags and he wrote down, "Add this one before fermentation, the other one after." Out of curiosity, I asked, "What are they? Could you explain a little?" And he says to me, "Sorry, I can't tell you. It's a trade secret. This is my job." This made me even more curious to find out what it was. So, after asking around, I learned that there was a school in Bordeaux for enology, where you could study winemaking. In 1974, which was the year I was to receive my degree as an agronomist, there was the coup in Cyprus, then the Turkish invasion, and I couldn't graduate. All the universities basically closed at that time. The Greek junta fell, and our rector, who had been for the junta, disappeared and couldn't graduate us. Things were quite dramatic for a few days. My registration had been approved, but my degree from the agronomy school was required to complete it. We waited outside the university every day, trying to find a lecturer to graduate us. Luckily, after about 17 days, we managed to get graduated. I got the coveted degree which I sent to France by post, because in those days there was no other way. And just before I was about to be rejected, they accepted me. These were quite dramatic days for me, as they were for the whole country, due to what was happening in Cyprus with the invasion, the Turkish invasion. So I left for France. The journey there was also quite dramatic. I'd got a map to see how you get to Bordeaux. According to my plan, I had to go by train, because there was no way I could fly, and I saw that first I had to get to Lyon, and from there to Bordeaux. I went to the station in Thessaloniki and asked for a ticket to Lyon in France. What the man there didn't know, and nor did I, was that the train station in Paris is called Gare de Lyon. So he ended up selling me a ticket for Paris. I remember that my father had come with me to see me off at the station together with my brother, and they'd brought a small bag of food. How else was I to eat? It would take us 3 straight days. So we started. And when we reached Milan and I changed trains, I had my first espresso ever. I'd never heard of it before. Although I hadn't slept in 2 days, the espresso kept me going for another 2. I'll never forget it. 4 days without sleep. When I got on the train in Milan for Gare de Lyon, I noticed that we were going via Switzerland. This was when I realized that I'd made a mistake. When I asked one of the guards, he said, "This train isn't going to Lyon, but you could get off at the French border with Italy and change there." I remember that I got off in a small village at a station where there was nothing. And it was 9 in the evening. I was the only one to get off. It was really cold. I had no idea where to go, and my train wasn't due until 10 the next morning. Of course, I didn't sleep at all that night, alone in the dark. Fortunately, the train came the next day, and I got to Bordeaux after 3.5 days. It was a difficult journey, but it took me to my future professional career. I was very moved by the environment I found there. At that time, Greece was at the heart of events due to the Turkish invasion in Cyprus, and France, which loved Greece because of the culture and their knowledge of Greek history, took me in not as a refugee, but like one of their own. I enrolled in the university. Later, I did my practical training in a winery, at first at the Chateau Petrus. The grandmother of the family there, although she had a lot of workers, Portuguese, Spanish, and me, took me into the estate, while the others slept in a warehouse, because she was fond of me because I was Greek. I ate at their table, not with the other workers. It was there that I saw elaborate corkscrews for the first time, which they used to open their wine. And I wanted to know the story of why there was so much artistry in such a utilitarian object for use with wine. And Mrs. Petrus introduced me to the world of art to do with wine. She taught me a little French when we were off work on Saturdays and took me around the vineyards on their beautiful estate. And I learned the stories of how much they loved the land, how much they loved the vine, and the history she'd learned from her grandfather and great-grandfather. I started my journey into a world which was wonderful and thrilling and felt like a mix of work, a hobby, and a love for viniculture and wine. It was there that I met, or rather he met me, the greatest professor of oenology, what you'd call a guru of wine, Émile Reynaud. At some point, he called me to his office and told me that he was a technical consultant for Porto Karas, the largest state in Greece, and if I wanted, he could intercede, once I'd finished university in France, for me to work for Porto Karas. At that time, I just started my PhD in chromatography, and it was a little difficult to leave because the course would take at least 3 years. I had to weigh the two things up, and it was there that Émile Reynaud really helped me by asking me two questions. Do you want an academic career, or do you want to work in the field? And of course, there was only one answer, because what I wanted to do was work. We went with two or three other fellow students who went on to do great things in oenology in France, because he always took the best students with him, to visit Chateau Rothschild, Chateau Latour, Briand, all the major chateaux. We did tasting from the tanks and took samples for analysis, something that now seems unbelievable. That gave me some experience and some knowledge that, at first, was hard to understand. What did I find? It was that all those mythical wines, which today are incredibly expensive, were made and cultivated in exactly the same way we did. It was just that their experience was great, and their love for the product and their passion was such that they had succeeded in getting the best out of the quality of their vines in the winery. Something that I've tried to do since then, and to inspire others, including my children, to know that wine is made on the vine. Everything takes place on the vine. In the winery, we can, if we have the technology and know-how, take the quality we get from the vine and preserve it 100% and trap it inside a bottle of wine. Once I'd finished university in Bordeaux and then my military service, I was thrown in at the deep end, taking on the Porto Karas estate. With 4.5 square kilometers of vines and 80 workers, I don't know if that was arrogant of me now that I think about it, or if I hadn't realized what I was taking on. It was there that we discovered the Malagousia variety. The late Professor Logothetis from the University of Thessaloniki had an experimental vineyard at Porto Karas, where he'd collected 26 Greek varieties, among which was Malagousia. There were 56 of these vines, but when I tasted the grapes and saw that they were good, we planted more. It took 10 years for us to produce the first wine. After 25 years, we gave Malagousia to other producers. I singled out this wine because of its dynamics, and I wanted to set up my own vineyard. So, in 1983, I planted this variety in Epanomi, on a small estate. We had about 4 hectares, and we planted this variety together with Assyrtiko. It was the first time that Assyrtiko had travelled so far from Santorini, at a time when Santorinian wine wasn't so well known. I created the first blend in Greece, Assyrtiko and Malagousia, and it was the Ktima 1985. It's easy to make a blend of wines. To make a good blend is a lot more difficult. From what I know of Assyrtiko, which has high acidity and a low pH, I wanted to pair it with a variety that was more aromatic, like Malagousia, which doesn't have the acidity. So I married the two wines. As for the ratio, that is down to the intuition and know-how of the wine producer. When I first planted the vineyard, it became my job on Wednesday afternoons and Sundays. While working for Porto Carras, I would leave on Wednesday afternoons and come here to my own little vineyard, which I worked together with my mother. And on Sundays, when I came to Epanomi again, together with my mother, we raked and cultivated the vines ourselves. I planted all the vines myself by hand here at the Hierro Basilio estate. I personally handled the tractor and the sprinklers, of course, together with my mother and relatives. We didn't have any workers. It was still a time when our relatives helped out in everything. My father used to tell me that his neighbors built his house. That's how things were done in those days. When someone was building a house, the neighbors would come and help in whatever way they could. And it was with friends and family that we cultivated the vines, which had reached about 40 hectares by that time. It goes without saying that we didn't have fixed hours. This seemed very normal to me because I remembered my parents leaving in the morning, depending on the season, almost as soon as the day dawned, and coming back with the sunset. No fixed hours. So for me, work was a gift from above and not hard at all. It was just that sometimes there didn't seem to be enough hours in the day. We just worked until we realized what time it was. And that's how we gradually built up a large nucleus here at the Hierro Basilio estate, because work went well. The wine sold well, and the Hierro Basilio estate became famous. We kept investing all the money we made, and it gradually grew, and we began to take on workers, build the winery, and extend slowly, either buying or renting land close to the estate. I was lucky when I met and married my wife Sonia, because she came from a family of entrepreneurs and was used to seeing her husband working from morning till night. She also came into the business, although she didn't come from an agricultural family. She helped me succeed, and I owe her a lot. When was the first vinification? 1976. From then until now, I have done 58 harvest seasons. And no harvest is the same. No 2 years are the same. And that's what makes the wine distinctive. And we say the year was good, okay, or bad. So depending on the raw material you have to adapt your vinification. That's the talent of each enologist, to have the creative instinct to create the best product you can with the raw material you have. Anyone can get the paint, but it takes a great artist to paint you a great picture. For us, a lot depends on nature, what we call the year, the weather throughout the year as well as the ground in the area. We have a lot of mountains, a lot of valleys and rivers and many, many islands. All these create specific areas and microclimates, so a variety might express itself differently in each area. And that's a good thing, because it shows you the dynamics of our country. There are about 30 different Greek varieties with specific flavors which can provide global consumers with new taste experiences. The future is in new tastes, and there our country has a great future ahead. Our country was known as Amberlisa because it had so many vines. Homer mentions it. The vine has been my whole life. And it has given me such joy and success. Not in my wildest dreams did I believe that I would reach this point, and I'm lucky that it will go on. My children have not been infused with wine, but with the spirit of enology and viniculture. I think that it's only natural that a child who grows up in a family where there is wine on the table every day and everyday conversation is, we have to rake around such and such a vine. Tomorrow we have to top the vines. We have to find two workers to fix the tractor. All of this slowly gets into the children's subconscious, and they come to love it without trying, because they see what I saw in my parents.
Γιατί όλη η ζωή μου ήταν το αμπέλι.
Because the vine has been my whole life.
Historima. Listen to the Extraordinary. A collaboration between ERT Echo and Historima.org. Historima is supported by a founding grant from the Stavros Niarchos Foundation.